This podcast was produced on the lands of the Kabi Kabi people. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging and thank them for how they have lovingly cared for and preserved the land, natural resources, and bush medicine in which we are inspired by today. Welcome to the Students of Natural Health podcast. My name is Dana Laura. I'm a student naturopath from Australia, and I'm going to be your host for this episode. Now, anybody that knows me in real life or has been listening to the podcast for a long time will know that I have a particular interest in the area of pregnancy, birth, preconception, and beyond. So it is with my greatest pleasure that I'm introducing to you Sasha from Barefoot Midwifery. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a fantastic episode for any students that are considering, you know, stepping into the space of birth work and beyond. And what better way to learn what you're getting into from a seasoned professional such as yourself? How long have you been in the midwifery space for?
So I went to UC in Canberra, and I graduated the end of 2016. And I moved, as soon as I graduated, I moved up to Brisbane with my now husband. And the process of getting a grad position was extremely difficult because I was from another state. I had my year 12 from another state. So the way that they label it is if you've, or tier it, if you've obtained your degree in the same state, then your first preference. If you obtained your degree elsewhere, but you got your year 12 in this state, then your second preference, and then anyone else is kind of at the bottom. So I was near the bottom of the list, and there's limited, as many student midwives or new grads are aware, there's actually limited positions for students to step into as a grad. So I had about 6 months of like, oh, it'll come. And then I started to go, is it actually coming?
Oh, no.
I started to get a bit stressed out. I reached out on a Facebook group just like, begging someone, like, tell me where there's work. I'll travel. Like, if I have to travel, I'll travel. And the unit manager at the time for Rockhampton Hospital commented and said, send me a message or send me an email. Contacted her, and yeah, she hired me, just sort of threw me into the grad program that I didn't realize. I thought I was just getting thrown in as a employee, just to thrown in the deep end, but they actually managed to squeeze me into their grad program, which was great. And I did week on, week off, so FIFO. So I flew to Rockhampton for a week, and then I'd come home for a week and be with my family. So that was very hard for my husband. We have a blended family of six children.
Wow.
So my four and his two. And then when I was home, he had to travel for his work, and he did long hours. So it was, I would not do it again, and I don't recommend it to anyone, but it was, I either do this now or I potentially don't get to work for a while. And yeah, just trying to get your foot in the door down the track would have been even harder. Most of the time you need to have at least a grad year, because you couldn't even get agency work without at least 1 year.
Wow. That's exhausting too, because the actual midwifery degree itself requires a lot of placement and clinical hours and everything too. You're coming off the tail end of that. That's, yeah. Wow. So, sorry, did you say you can't get a position unless you do a grad year? Like, it's not like you
not
can just...
through an agency. Yeah, so I couldn't... I applied for a lot of jobs. I've written a lot of cover letters. I've got a long list of them. I probably should delete them. I don't need them anymore. And yeah, unless you've got experience, they don't want a bar of you. And then so I'm like, well, I'll go through agency, and most of them are actually minimum of 2 years experience before they'll take you, because a lot of the time with agency you're getting thrown in the deep end anyway. It's short staff, here, go do the ward shift, and expected to know how to find things and what to do. So it wouldn't have been appropriate anyway. But I did find some agencies said from 1 year, and I did do some agency work after a while, like once I had that under my belt, but I didn't last very long. That was private hospitals. It didn't go that well for me.
Yeah. Cause you're mainly in the home birth space, aren't you?
I am now. Yeah. 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 But not obviously at the beginning. You have to work your way towards that. So yeah. So that was the beginning. I then managed to get a casual position at my local hospital, and then I reached out to a lot of, I started volunteering for Home Birth Queensland, facilitated home birth circles, and I was like, this is where I want to be. So I started reaching out to home birth midwives, like, could I be a second? I will attend, like, let me work with you. And yeah, it was hard to get your foot in the door with them as well, because obviously everyone has their people, and I get it because I'm now in that space. So trying to, however, I am open more to new grads and people who are stepping into the space to work with, because that's the only way you can begin. Someone's got to take a chance. You. So I managed to get a position at a private midwifery clinic up in Maroochydore. So I'm very grateful for them. And basically, I had to tick off hours. So that was, so I started working in the home birth space from March 2020. So attending births as a second and filling in clinic appointments. And I did all the antenatal education, which was lovely, like doing women's circles and couples sessions to learn all about birth and all those sorts of things. So that made up for my time at the hospital because it filled my cup.
I should probably ask, like, how did midwifery find you? Was it something you always wanted to do, or did it find you in a different way?
It definitely found me in a different way. I had children young, so I had twins at the age of 16 and didn't even think about it, midwifery at all at that point. Never even crossed my mind. I was too busy having children and being in space. I then had my daughter at 20, and then my mum actually remarried and had a son, and I actually went to the birth for him. So watching his birth, and I think having that different perspective, which I can see that, like, when you attend a birth as a second or a support person, you see, and even as a midwife, as the primary, you see it from a different perspective, and you're seeing everyone else in the room and their role. And mum was leaning over the bed and birthed my brother, and they just passed him to me because I was standing next to her, so that while she sort of got comfortable in the bed, and they just kind of gave him to me, and I'd held a baby, obviously, because I already had three before, like, fresh, and I was like, oh, gross. Like, okay, like, oh, I'm holding the baby. And then when I passed him by, I was like, oh, that's not too bad, I could do that.
That's gorgeous.
But from there, I was like, oh, I like this. This is kind of good. But I didn't want to do nursing. So then I started to look into it, and I found out that in Canberra they did have a direct entry program, so the Bachelor of Midwifery. I didn't have my Year 12 yet, so that was my first challenge or step that I needed to take. So that's what I did next. I went and got my Year 12, and then I applied and got into uni.
Fantastic. That's amazing. Sorry, I'm just sitting with it and processing it. Wow. That was your first experience, was holding your baby brother and then just thinking, okay, maybe that's something I might want to do. With the rose-colored glasses on, I guess, has midwifery turned out to be what you thought it was going to be like?
Yes, I feel like, because I've always enjoyed working with women. I know some people, I know I've had students say, oh, I love working with babies. I'm like, you're in the wrong profession. This is not working with babies in this space. You're working with the women. And I've always enjoyed working with women and connecting. And like, even when I had my children young, I organized mums groups at my home so we could, like, hold space and facilitate and support each other. So I'd already started that at quite a young age. And so yeah, I feel like it has. Obviously, there's different layers to it. As you become a home birth midwife, there's challenges and regulatory bodies that we have to deal with. But otherwise, yes, like, it's, if I stay true to what, why, my why, then yes, absolutely. Which is why I'm in home birth and not in a hospital. If I was working in a hospital, I would not be doing it anymore. I found that quite soul destroying. So, in the space that I'm in now, I'm satisfied. Yes.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. I enrolled into midwifery. I started the first term and it was very much like drilled into you. Like, it's not what you think it's going to be. It's like, if you think that this is called a midwife, think again, like, get out, kind of situation. And yeah, there seemed to be a little bit of a eat the young kind of mentality. But in saying that, you're so right. It's exactly like working with the women. It's about going back to your why. I think you brought up a really interesting point about had you stayed into hospital, it might not have been as sustainable for you. Have you got any strategies for overcoming that burnout that, from what I've heard from interviewing a lot of nurses, is kind of inevitable? Have you got any strategies for overcoming burnout or imposter syndrome or low motivation when those tough times hit?
So burnout, I mean, you can get that in any space, not necessarily just hospital. I don't necessarily feel like I had burnout in that setting. I was working when I was a grad, it was week on week off. So I had a whole week to sort of replenish and be with my family, and then just head down, bum up, focus on what you're doing when you're there. And then it was only casual at the hospital. Plus, I was then at the home clinic, the private clinic. So it was a very different energy. So that complemented having to be in the other setting. And then I also facilitated students. So that was, I really enjoy teaching. So I never felt burnout. Obviously, I was trying to smash my hours out. So there were some weeks where it was a bit more intense, but it didn't feel like that. I think if anything, since being a home birth midwife, I've probably had more burnout. That's come down to me not spending, setting better boundaries and saying no. And because obviously you hear someone's story and you want to just take them on and support them. And sometimes I would say yes to women who live way too far for me and pushing my boundaries further. So I've had to really reel back and go, okay, no, this is as far as I'll travel. End of story. This is my limit, and I have to accept that that's how it is. And you can't help everyone. I think, especially as a student as well, you want to save everyone, and you just can't. It's not your story. You have to actually have good boundaries for yourself as well. So that's probably, seeing that, feeling that more in private practice than my experience in the other setting, because I didn't, I had an unusual beginning in the hospital setting. So then what was the other? Oh, the imposter syndrome. I have probably felt that more as an educator, particularly with my new course. It was more like, oh, am I allowed to teach this? But yeah, it's kind of just something that you sit with. I think I'll probably still have layers of it here and there, like especially like just before a class starts. It's like, oh, feeling a bit nervous. And but once I'm in it, I guess, yeah, coming to present moment, like when you're in it and doing it, it doesn't matter. And you forget about all the, like with that imposter syndrome, you're thinking, oh, should I be doing this in the future? Or was that okay in the past? It's not right now. What am I doing right now? And when you're actually teaching, you're in that moment right then and there, and you're not thinking about, I shouldn't be here, or shouldn't be teaching, or shouldn't be offering clinical care, or whatever the situation is for the individual. So I think practicing presence would help shift that feeling.
Yeah, well said. It's just don't let it stop you from doing it, because once you're in it, that's when the hurdles overcome.
Exactly.
Beautiful, beautiful. So you were saying that you are doing courses that you're currently teaching and you're in the education space. I know we've got a few little things that I'd love to discuss with you. So are you able to tell me a little bit about how you got into some of your other accreditations, such as like as a kahuna massage therapist, your sacral somatic therapy, your closing of the bones and yoga instructing and all of the fun things? When did they sort of come along in the journey?
So yoga, or actually I did hypnobirthing first. So I was still ticking off my hours and trying to just find ways to, I really didn't like being an employee. I like
Fair.
working for myself and being able to decide when I'm on holiday. And like, 'cause even working at the private practice, there was always a negotiation of when you could take leave. And I unfortunately had some experiences where I had mine booked, and then I wasn't preferenced, and someone else who's new took over, and they got to have that leave, and there's a lot of drama with that. But anyway, it was kind of like, yeah, okay, I'm done pleasing everyone else. I want to be the boss. I want to be my boss, and I decide when, especially when you've got younger children, like you want to have that flexibility to be with them when you want, rather than when it's appropriate for your work or decided by your boss. So I did hypnobirthing training with the Mongan method, and I started teaching that privately, and I actually started to do some doula work. So while working, actually that might even be, I think that was before I even started the private practice. Yes, I did the hypnobirthing, and I even created my own education class that, so if hypnobirthing didn't tick a box for someone, like if it wasn't quite their thing, I had an alternative to sort of go through the phases of labor and what to expect and pain relief methods. So I had my own version. So if someone employed me as a doula, they could book the hypnobirthing version or the other version, and then I'd support them in labor and birth. They were all hospital births. I had a very accidental, precipitous birth at home.
Oh, wow.
This is not allowed. I'm not meant to be here, because obviously I was not endorsed. But I literally turned up. The parents were leaving with the kids. As I walked in, the dad said the water's just broke, and then she was pushing. I was like, okay, we're going to call an ambulance. So it was a very quick birth, and yeah, the paramedics turned up. They wanted to cut the placenta, and I was like, no, just she wants to birth it here. Like, leave her be. They're like, oh, we have to get her to the hospital. I'm like, but why? Like, she's not bleeding. Like, she's well. And I was like, oh, this is where, yeah, I really want to be here. This is where I want to be, right here, but legally. That would be great. So anyway, she had an amazing birth, and then all the others were at the hospital, and they're all private, and they all were inductions, and most ended in cesareans. And I was like, this is a very hard line, because you're there as a doula, you're registered midwife, so you have the knowledge. I'm observing these midwives and doctors tell these women, we're concerned about baby's well-being. I'm looking at the CTG on the screen going, why? Because like, I know very well how to interpret a CTG. I had good scores on my CTG training. And I'm like, no, this baby is well. Like, there's nothing here. But then I also couldn't cross that line because I'm there as a doula. I'm not their employee. I'm not there. I'm not a private midwife. It felt hard to sort of step over that line.
Yeah, I can
But
imagine.
that really made me go, right, I can't do the doula. I'm either a home birth or private midwife, or I'm not even doing this. It's just too much. So that's what pushed me a little bit more, because I was like, oh, it's so much work to get the hours, and that kind of pushed me more to get that. So yeah, so I've had experience as a doula. I've done the hypnobirthing, and then I did the yoga, because I thought, oh, what better way to connect with women than like doing pregnancy yoga. So I did that training, and I did general classes as well as pregnancy classes. But turns out you don't make a lot of money as a yoga teacher. Spend a lot of money on the training, but you don't make, unless you are teacher training, you really don't make much money teaching yoga. Especially when you've got to cover cost of room hire, you've got people that won't turn up. So yeah.
I didn't even consider that. It's sort of something that I suppose in the natural health space, a lot of people are like, no brainer, also be a yoga instructor. That's
Yeah,
extra
you really
income.
don't make much unless you want to charge a lot. And like, for me, there's no way I would go and pay $50 for a yoga class. That's the reality. When you then look at the cost of a room hire, then you've got to make sure that they've got all the equipment, or is it BYO mat? Yeah, I was like, this is not as simple as I imagined.
Yeah. No, thank you for your candor on that. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Keep going.
It's a nice complimentary, and what I've learned in that obviously just aligns beautifully with midwifery when I'm talking about pelvic alignment and like in pregnancy, and what maneuvers can they do to help with sciatic pain. And so it's complemented well. Like, it's all gone really well, and there's layers of hypnobirthing. If a client's doing that in birth, I know what they're doing. I can read the scripts, or I can support that as much as possible for them. And then I followed a woman, so a woman who I trained, sorry, worked with in Rockhampton, Amy Tao. She owns Temple of She. So I heard about yoni massage when I worked with her back in 2017, because someone mentioned it to me, and I was like, oh, I had a night shift with her. I was like, right, tell me all about this. I want to know about that. So I refer to it as sacral somatic session or therapy. And that's purely because yoni and massage can't go together in advertising, which is a
Oh,
thing.
really?
Yes, so apparently yoni means sex work, or like it comes under that category, even though, just for the listeners, yoni actually just means an encompassing area of the female anatomy. So the vulva, the womb, the pelvic bowl, like the whole space is referred to as the yoni. So apparently that's sex work, and legally in Queensland you can't put sex work and massage in the same sentence.
That is my mouth is on the floor. That's crazy. Like I've always known it as well as that. It's another word for the female anatomy, but wow.
So
Wow.
I think Victoria, they're fine to keep the labelling, but every other state I think is, you can't have them together. So it's something actually we discovered later after I'd done my training, and even she had looked at, like, spoken with a lawyer and everything, like made sure all that was clear, and it then picked up and went, oh, hang on, actually you probably shouldn't use these two words together. And you're like, seriously? We had to go and change everything. So refer to it as sacrosomatic therapy. But it's the
Yeah,
same.
I
Same
was
thing as me.
introduced to it through you. I like when I because I've been following you for a few years quietly, just in the background, doing my research about all of the wonderful magnificent branches that you can go within birth work and, you know, working with women. Are you able to tell us a little bit about it? Because I don't know, I suppose there's some misconceptions about what it is. Yeah.
Everyone always wants to know about it. my last interview, it did go off on a tangent on this as well. It is, I trained with Amy, so I'd watched her a few years and then I went to do it and then we had COVID and it had to be online. I was like, I want to do this face-to-face. Like a lot of the training's online, but then we have a face-to-face like week together where we practice with each other and all that. And then you go do some practice on clients as well after. So I was like, no, if I'm doing it, I want that face-to-face connection, like, because she does breath work and all sorts of things as well. So I was like, no, I want to be physically there. I'm that kind of person. I'm not a fan. I was so over the online. I was teaching online at the time too. So I was like, I'm so done with online. Like, let me be there in person. So I waited till the next one came up that it would be face to face and booked in. And it's a yoni, sacral somatic session.
I won't tell.
Full body massage. So it's for women. I don't offer it to men. So men, it's referred to as lingam massage. So there are some that offer it, but it's fair few that do it. The session is ceremonial. So it's a 3-hour session. I connect prior. So I have questions and I ask the woman, like, what's her relationship with her body? Like, how does she feel as a woman? Like, is there any history of trauma? Obviously, like the basics of any health concerns and things like that. But the deeper questions are around relationship as a woman with your body and things like that. And so then we have a bit of a chat beforehand and sort of I might have questions around that. We do a undressing ceremony. And so it is floor work. So I have these mats on the ground with cushions and everything. And I get her to stand at the end of the bed and I sit at the other end. And then with each, as she removes each item, including like necklaces, jewelry, watches, hair ties, whatever's on the body, I ask her to remove it and share with me anything that she wants to let go of. So verbally letting that go to the point where she's completely naked. I get her to take a nice deep breath and just she can look at me in the eyes or she can close her eyes. Obviously, it's a very vulnerable point.
Yeah.
And I go through this with them beforehand that I will admire their body and just take in their beauty and just let themselves be seen. We then, I ask her to lie down on her belly and I do a full body at the back massage. So the movements that we use, I find them quite similar to Kahuna. I've done my Kahuna training after. And at one point my trainer had said, oh, I thought you already did Kahuna. I was like, oh, no, I don't. I'm doing that. So I realized I did flow quite similar, but it's very, you have a playlist and it's on shuffle and you let the music lead the way. And that's much the same with Kahuna. If the song is going faster, then you might move a bit faster. If it's going really slow, you might be a lot slower. So it leads the way and often it's perfect. It comes perfectly for that woman. The touches that we use, it could be firm touch, it could be light touch, like that real tickly, get the goosebumps. It could be more caressing and like wiping the, like, I can't think of the word I'm trying to describe it with my hand in the video. People
like the face, like caressing the face kind
of thing. Face, yes, yeah. Like a mother would to their child, like patting their hair, like just a bit of everything. We do focus on the erogenous zones, like the wrists, the earlobes. So it's just tapping into what actually feels good in your body and getting to discover that without the expectation of having to offer anything in return, which often happens when you do something like this with a partner. Usually, okay, well, you do me and I'll do you. Whereas this, you turn up, you receive, you leave. Like, it's lovely. So I do a bum massage. We put oil in the hair and do a head massage. And then when she rolls over, I then massage the front of the belly and I do offer breast massage throughout that face. Don't touch the yoni space. Just massaging the front of the body. I then, if it feels right, I'll ask for consent to sit between her legs but not touch the space. And then if it's appropriate, then I'll ask for consent to touch the outside of her yoni. And so there is erogenous stimulation there, but it can also just be mapping and just massaging the labia and just explaining the area. So some women don't know their anatomy, particularly if we do internal massage as well. I do offer the mapping right at the beginning so they know and explain what it feels like. So your G-spot's just inside. It feels a bit like the rigid bit in the roof of your mouth if you felt it with your finger. So it can be educational as well. It's really dependent on the woman and what she needs and what she's looking for. And, yeah, so spend time on the outside, and then if consent, then I'll ask to touch the inside of the yoni, and like I said, mapping and massaging the area. Sometimes there can be knots and we can focus on those areas. Sometimes there's pleasure and that's okay as well. So it's really up to the practitioner to show up however the woman needs her to show up, without any attachment or any expectations, and we just hold that space for them.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be a no. So I might ask for consent and she says no, and there's a lot of power in that because the no is heard and it's respected. We might talk about that no a bit more, like, where are you feeling it in your body? Do you need to, like, let's talk that out. Could you describe it as a color? Or yes, yeah, so sort of going into the emotional side, and that might then transform into a yes, or it might stay as a no, and I'll just stay on the body, and that's fine. So when the session's over, I then I do have a medicine drum. I try and bring that into most of my layers of services that I offer to women. So I do play that over their body. So they have a sarong over their body, so they're wrapped up, and I usually put a heat pack over their womb, and they just have a moment to relax there. And then I bring them back, and then they stand at the end of the bed, and they adorn themselves back with all their items. But each item, they're now going to share with me what they want to call in for themselves. So it's very ceremonial, right? Okay. And they usually are like standing with confidence in their nudity and putting their layers. I want this. I want this. Like, I'm having all these things. And then we sit down and have a bit of a chat, and I do offer a check-in 1 to 2 weeks after. So I do give quite a lot of homework in these sort of sessions, like after I send an email with breath work and different practices that they can do, books that I recommend just to help them tap into a bit more. Yeah, and then that's kind of it.
That's fantastic. I'm so into that. Like, I love it's such an empowering impact. It's so empowering for the woman, and it's I didn't even realize that that kind of work was needed, but I mean, obviously you must see, that it's needed in the community because you're booking these and you're doing them, and it must be really interesting to see what they're like 2 weeks after their check-in too. What Like you said, you can see the difference immediately, but how they'll carry that through their lives.
Depends on their priority and whether they're committing to the homework. Like, some just jump straight back into their busyness and they're like, oh yeah, I haven't done anything. And you can see, like, it's like, okay, you did this for a reason. Like, come back to serving yourself and putting yourself first. So it's all a matter of the individual to commit to that continuously. And it could, like I say to them, it could be 5 minutes a day, and other days it might be an hour. Like, just a moment of presence and just that intention to actually take time for self.
Yeah. Is it similar as well for your closing of the bones workshops as well? Your closing of the bones ceremonies and workshops, sorry.
Closing the bones is no, it's a lot shorter and a lot cheaper. No nudity. No, closing the bones. So I was taught by Jenny Blythe many years ago, I think maybe 2017, 2018, something like that. I did one of her courses, and she taught that in that session, and it just really resonated with me. And I just started offering it to, like, all the clients and clients that were at the midwifery clinic. It was something that could be offered, and then women obviously could just book in. I've had women purchase it as a gift for someone to then receive after their baby. And it's not necessarily just after a baby, it could be after the end of a career, after a divorce, like that closing of the old and the beginning of the new, and just that resetting the body. So it is a there's different types of, I mean, traditionally it's taught to belly bind and wrap the body and bring the warmth back into the body and support the organs back to where they go after birth. I don't do it specifically like that because I'm doing around 5 weeks and I'm just doing the one, unless someone wanted another one, but usually I do standard of one. And I see it more around the energetic work. So birth is big. So obviously I'm mostly working with women post-birth. Birth is big, regardless if it's a vaginal or a cesarean birth. Energetically, we are very pushed outward. And then when it is like postpartum, the woman's often feeling pulled for newborn, pulled for husband, pulled for toddler, pulled for whoever else, and there's little time for them to come back to themselves. So this is about 50, 60 minutes of time where they literally are just, it's just all about them being held and wrapped up and supported. And I use the medicine drum for that as well. And yeah, and I started teaching the Closing the Bones workshops last year. I had a doula friend reach out to me saying, oh, could you teach me to do this. And I'm like, oh, if you get a couple of his, sure, like I can just do it at my home, and it would be convenient because I was getting a lot of inquiries, but also working a lot as a private midwife, and like, I didn't have capacity. And some are inquiring for like Ipswich, and which is like
Oh,
an hour and
wow.
a half, and I'm like, I just can't do that. It's just too far for an hour work. So yeah, so she wrangled up three other doors. I thought capacity would be four because just the space, and I also wanted to be really intimate. I don't want it to be a big money maker. It's an intimate session where you learn and focus on the energetics and holding that space for the woman. So I did that, and I was like, oh wow, I loved that. That was fun. So then I was like, maybe I'll just see if there's a need for this and start advertising. And now, yeah, I'm probably doing. I try and do more. No more than three to four a year, but I think this year it's only going to do, I will be doing two. One, I've just done one yet last week, and then I'll do another one at the end of the year, just to offer that service. Yeah. And then Kahuna massage, I did my training last year. I felt the pull to do that for a while, some kind of massage, yoni massage, sacral somatic sessions, whatever. all work, it's really hard on the body. So you're like leaning over the body and trying to support your back. I've got to like try and sit up and do these movements. And I might be really nice to be able to do some massage on the table. So Kahuna, I find it's still got that flow. The music is still leading the way and you're dancing around the body, and I don't have a tender back at the end of it. So I love doing Kahuna. And then also opens it up because I can do men as well for that. So actually one of my past clients booked me in last Monday, and she asked me to just do a little something for the kids. So they just had their clothes on. I just put a sarong. We do like this stretching and like pressure on the body. So I did that for each of the kids, a
Oh,
little session
beautiful.
each. And then mum and dad got a full hour massage of Kahuna after. So everyone was nice and relaxed afterward. So
Oh.
it's better to do something that caters for the whole family rather than just mum. So yeah, so they all kind of complement in with each other. And my focus of doing those other services, so when I'm off call, I actually have some other income coming in because you can't survive off call with no income. So you need to have some backup.
You're so right though. They all complement each other so well. And I feel like whether it was a conscious thing or a subconscious thing, like you picked up the places that you noticed were lacking, like with in sense of like looking after people's energy and looking after people's well-being in that other sort of space. It's fantastic. Is there anything that you really would endorse for like a student midwife or a student doula that you think, I think that this was absolutely invaluable to my practice. You've got to do this.
Probably wouldn't tick everyone's boxes. I also did training, theater healing training, which it can be viewed as a bit woo-woo. So it's energetic work, and I actually use that unconsciously in my practice, like digging into layers. So I feel, I mean, as midwives, we are untrained counselors.
Yeah,
Most of
yeah.
the time we're doing is just being a venue, like an avenue for a woman to debrief, talk, whatever needs to come out. And that training's actually really helped me in how to facilitate that, how to ask questions, how to help them dig deeper into their emotions. So not necessarily that, you could just do, I think the biggest thing in this space when you're working with people in general is communication and understanding the importance of your non-verbal communication as well as your verbal communication, and then being able to read that as well. So read that from them, and then also reading it between a woman and her partner or support person, which my next adventure or training, I've decided to do counselling training with the plan to do relationships counselling because I really love observing the interactions between couples and supporting them in how to communicate with each other, and yeah, giving them work to do together to build that connection. And so that's my next goal.
Beautiful,
Yeah, so,
beautiful.
and I've always been a big fan of communicate. I actually had to write a policy as a student midwife in my final year, and I chose to do it on communication. So I wrote a policy on communication and nonverbal and verbal communication, how we interpret that and how that needs to be applied. And yeah, as midwives.
It's such a important part of your role too, in terms of like, yeah, communicating with Do you ever feel like you're just doing like damage control? Like you're trying to communicate with the doctors and the nurses, you're trying to communicate with the family, you're trying to communicate with the birthing woman, trying to communicate with other third party sort of situations. Do you feel like they touched on that at all in your studies, or that's ex all stuff you've had to source
That's where
yourself?
mine came. Yeah, I don't know why I chose that as my policy. It was so like when I think back, I'm like, God, out of all the things, like I think mine was a bit out of the genre. I think a lot of people were sort of looking at epidurals or this or that, like the standard stuff that you expect to see a policy. You're not going to see a policy on communication, like how ridiculous. But I'm like, well, it actually is needed because that's what I witnessed as a student, particularly in my final year, like lack of communication, BEs being done without consent prior to a cesarean, a cold cesarean, saying that, like, as if something would have changed for that woman. And it was like, well, why didn't you just communicate and ask for consent before you did that? And just observing, I got to see, I guess it's just something I've just naturally done, is observe people and how they behave and talk. And so I would observe this obstetrician talking to a woman and what kind of language was used to coerce, is the
Yeah.
best to. And then I'd see her attend, because with my follow through, I'm following this woman through, and then I'd see her be spoken to by the midwife and what kind of language was used, and see the different and how they would face their body to the woman versus the doctor looking at the computer and sort of just turning their head. So it was just, I was an observer as a student, and that really, that's what stood out for me, was watching the differences and how those women received care between the different layers, and how they, yeah, it was, I am a people watcher.
I love
I
that.
find it fascinating. So yeah.
Like, do you sit at cafes and you're watching everybody in
No, because I
the
never have time, but I would love to.
Oh.
I think I watched that on a movie or something not long ago, or someone had said that, and it's like, God, I'd love to sit at a cafe and just watch people.
Well, permission after if you've got time, if you're not working straight after.
If I'm sitting at a cafe, I've got my laptop and I'm doing my work, so there's no, yeah, there's no observing. But yes, it is like when I go to like conferences and like midwifery events, or yeah, it's always just happening unconsciously, observing.
Yeah, totally. Sorry, we went on a bit of a tangent there.
Yeah,
But
yes.
it's great. It's great. I love it. I'm gonna put a spicy one in here. Is there anything that you would have that you've regretted or you would have done differently in your career?
No, even despite I'm currently under investigation with ARPRA, I still wouldn't change anything because I have a strong belief in not having regrets, or try not to hold grudges as well. That's that work on that still.
Oh, you and me both.
But I've when something detrimental, like big contrast happens, you tend to then find these other things. You're like, oh, well, I probably wouldn't have done that if this event hadn't happened. And so yeah, there's a few things that's happened since then that I'm like, oh, well, that I wouldn't have had the time to do that, and this wouldn't have evolved this way. And I can see the growth that I've got out of that experience as well, from all different past experiences that most people be like, oh, I wish that didn't happen. But I'm like, well, I also got positives out of it too. So then there's no point in holding on to that negative. You still have your grudges. But it is what it is. You've already lived it. It's already happened. So let's make do with what we've got.
Yeah, that well said. That's very high emotional intelligence to be able to get to that point. Don't get me wrong though, it doesn't come naturally for a lot of people to just be able to go, okay, well, let's look at the positives. Like that sucks and that takes a process to get there, but
A lot of, I mean, I've done a lot of meditation in my past, and I think that's helped with evolving and growing. And yeah, you kind of just, it comes, it just comes at different times for different people.
Okay, on the flip side of that, have you got any patient standout stories or stories from your career that you're like, that was a freaking win? Absolutely.
I was trying to think about this, and I'm like, oh God, who would I, whose story would I tell? There is one. It's, I wouldn't say it was a win. It was more just a aha moment, that really helped shape my practice as a private midwife. So one of my very first clients lives out bush. So when I was starting, like, she literally would have been one of my first births, I'm pretty sure, as a home birth midwife. First baby, they were booked elsewhere. I had to leave because of the mandates and stuff, and they didn't like who was left to care for them, so they decided to leave and they reached out to me and asked me to look after them. So I was like, yep, I can do that. So her labor, like, she just cracked on with, I think her waters had broken first on a Saturday. She was out at the markets, broke on the Saturday at the markets, so awkward.
Wow.
Out, time to go home. And she'd started to labor by the Sunday, and we talked obviously about like prolonged rupture of membranes and recommendation for antibiotics to go to the hospital, those sorts of things. And she declined all of that, and she wanted to do expectant management, so keeping an eye on her temperature and wellness and keeping an eye on baby and all those sorts of things. And so her labor had started, and she sort of had a few on off, but I found when it picked up, then I'd turn up, and she's like probably an hour and 20 from where I lived at the time. So it wasn't a short drive, and being a first-time mum as well, you're like, well, it could be a long process. Anyway, when I turn up, it was like nothing was happening, and she'd be there just she met me at the like they had a little deck at the front door, and she'd come out the deck, and I'm like, oh, okay, we're definitely too early. I'm thinking, shit, I've driven all this way, I'm going to turn around, and yeah, she'd just have a chat. She's still contracting, but she just would hold a conversation, and anyone who's worked in birth space, you kind of like. We start to go inward more as it
Yeah.
progresses, and I was thinking, oh, we're still early, like we've still got a while yet. Anyway, all was well. She was still good, bubs well, and I was like, all right, well, I don't think I need to be here, so I just sort of went home. Actually, no, I think at the first time I stayed because I thought, well, surely this is going to pick up. So I'd stayed, and I had Sarah Wickham's In Your Own Time book with me. I just started reading it. So I was like, well, I've got a book. You do your thing. And they had a small house, so it was hard for me to not be in her space. She kind of had to be in the bathroom or a bedroom to be out of the area, like to not have me in her space. So I just sat on the couch, and because there wasn't really anywhere outside as well, kind of farmy place with nowhere to sit. I don't know how else to describe that. Anyway, so I started reading my book, and I'd been there after a while, sort of accepted, okay, she doesn't really need me to be observing her. I need to just sort of, I'll just sit out in the lounge room and read my book. And I literally just got into these pages where she's literally talking about how we're always watching and we need to actually stop observing the woman. Like, it was just like exactly what I was doing. And I'm
Yeah,
reading,
wow.
okay. And if we actually just left women alone, they would just do their thing. And I was like, oh, I need to leave. Like, it was just like, I'm in her space. She can't relax. I need to leave. So I was like, all right, the book's told me I need to go. So yeah, and she was fine. She was quite happy doing her thing. Like, she didn't actually need me anyway. So I went home, and yeah, there was a few days of this sort of on off, and I ended up staying at a friend's place who lived a bit closer because I felt like, oh, we're close. And the next time that I went there, it was probably like the Wednesday or something. So waters had broken on the Saturday. We're now like following Wednesday, still no baby.
Yeah, okay.
And I sort of said, do you mind if I do a vaginal exam? Because I'm kind of like wondering what's going on here. And she was like 7 centimeters. I'm like, but not behaving like. She was still like meeting me at the door and having a conversation. I was like,
Oh, wow.
okay, maybe we just labor differently. So I'm not sure we're gonna have a baby now. And still nothing. Like, it was even like it just it would just the contractions would disappear more when I was there. So I'm like, right, she really doesn't want me in this space. And there was like really nowhere for me to go. The reception there wasn't great, so it wasn't like I could just drive down the road and just sort of wait there a bit. It was, yeah. So anyway, I left again. I said, I'm gonna go to a friend's place. So at least I'm close. I'm like, surely we're gonna have a baby soon. And I decided I'll come if I haven't heard from you overnight, I'll come see you the next day. Came and saw her the next day. She was out feeding her horses.
Oh my gosh.
So confused. It was like the first time home birth. Like, it was like, what is going on? Why isn't this baby just coming out? And like every time I listen to baby's well, no temperature. Like, fluid was still clear, but limited as it was, because obviously bub was sitting down low. I'm like, this is odd. I just don't understand. She didn't want to go to hospital, of course. So it was, I asked to do an exam again. Like, I'm curious, what's going on? This time she was 9 centimeters. And so there was progress. Like, I could feel the difference. The head is lower, and I'm like, right, okay. I was just like, So anyway, I went and stayed at my friend's place again that night because, again, same thing, contractions sort of settled. I'm like, maybe she's just going to have this baby when I'm not even there, and that's how it's meant to be. I'm just so confused. Went to a friend's place, and she called me like early the following morning, like sort of 4 a.m. It was still dark, and she's like, I'm done. Like, she'd finally hit the moment where she's like, I'm like, can you come and just see what's going on? If it's not, then we'll go to the hospital. I was like, okay, cool. That's like, we finally got a plan.
Far out.
Let's get going. It was the Thursday, early Thursday morning. So I drove out and I did an exam, and she was fully dilated and the head was so low. And I'm like, do you feel like you need a poo or anything? She's like, not really. And I'm like, let's just start pushing. Like, let's do that. And I, in reflection, her saying, I'm done, I can't do this anymore, she was actually in transition, but as such, and but she still came and met me at the door, fully dilated, and walking around her kitchen. And I'm like, I am so confused right now. Like, I've never seen anyone like this in labor, and this is my first experience as a home birth. Like, is this what it looks like? Is this what it's going to be? So literally, she actually had some coach pushing. Like, I was like, all right, into a deep squat, like you're doing a poo. And yeah, sure enough, she ended up having a baby. She ended up getting in the pool, like sort of last minute, and birthed her baby in the pool, and everything was totally fine. Bub never had any temp, her obs were great, and it was just the weirdest thing. And then we were talking about it, like debriefing and stuff. She said, oh, I do wonder if I have like unusual nerves or something going on, because she said that she'd actually broken her leg as a teenager running around, and she kept falling over and didn't understand why.
Wow.
That would have been really good information before the birth.
Yes.
So
No way.
her pain threshold was just so high. High, that's the right wording.
Yeah.
It was high, yeah.
Yeah.
That she just didn't have intense sensations with labor or the urge to push. It was
Like,
so surreal.
wow.
So yeah, that was like a whoa, you can just, women can do anything. Like, it's just amazing. Yeah. So that was my first adventure into home birth. It was like, this is what this looks like.
I want to say like baptism by fire, but not really because like it was so
Right.
passive.
I had to like coach her into do, like what to do, because she wasn't getting the uncontrollable urges, and just that sensation wasn't there, even though the head was really low as well. And she had fed her horses that morning as well, fully dilated, head like low, and she's out feeding her horses again that morning.
That's unreal. But
Crazy.
so cool that, like I was listening to that. I'm on the edge of my seat. I'm like, I've got anxiety. I'm thinking about
I
it,
know,
but
yeah, and I did too. I'm like, oh my God, this is not what we need. This is not how you start your practice.
oh my
Yeah, it was
gosh.
such a, yeah, like a, aha, okay, this, sometimes it's very unusual and it still works out. And it was all coming back to her trust and her feeling safe and well and tuning into baby. And at no point did she feel like, until she got to that transition, that she was like, okay, I'm done. But it was okay, we're actually just ready to have a baby now.
Yeah. And your trust in her to be able to.
Which, if I didn't read that passage in the book, I probably would have been like, okay, I'm a bit anxious. And there was layers of it, of course, because I'm like talking to my colleagues and stuff going, what the hell, like what's going on, this doesn't make sense. And that passage in the book was just that. Yes, I refer to it as the universe. Like, it was like, just sit with this.
Yeah, that was a touch of God right there. Hey,
Yeah.
I love
Give
that. It's not a typical experience, but that very different sort of energy shift and that trust within the woman, within herself, and you within the woman, is that a typical thing about home birth, like a typical trait of home births? And are there any sort of common misconceptions that people have about home birth?
As for traits, as in like within the midwife of home birth midwives, is that
Yeah,
what
like that trust and the
you're...
way that the woman presents, are they different in home birth patients than they are in?
Yeah, I think it would depend on the midwife and their trust and where they are personally as well. And the relationship with the woman, like, that's why we do continuity. We build that relationship and trust, and we know exactly what they do and don't like, which is why a lot of us won't book late bookings, because you can't establish that relationship in the right time. And then to be in a labor and birth setting where there's potential interventions needed if there's an emergency or something, trying to gain that trust for truly informed consent with a woman who hardly knows you is hard. And I know they have to try and gain that in a hospital setting, but a lot of the time it's not truly informed because she's in this lineal state in her mind that she can't really comprehend fully to know what the potential risk. And that's why we have birth trauma issues and stuff, because the women then reflect on it and go, well, I don't remember them saying that, or I don't remember this being explained, or and whether it was or wasn't, it's not, it wasn't obvious for the woman, because of the state that she's in her labor. But yeah, it would depend on the midwife and her practice and what she's bringing into that home setting. If she's bringing a hospital policy into the home, then probably not. If
Yeah.
she trust and compassion and coming back to being with women and what we are there for, then more likely. Obviously, we still have requirements that we have to tick, and unfortunately, if a woman doesn't agree with what the recommendations are, regardless if we have made sure it's informed and documented appropriately, we unfortunately can still be reported, not usually by the woman, usually by hospital if you're transferred or something like that. You can still be reported and still be reprimanded, because the woman chose against the recommendation, even though you've done your job. So that makes it hard for a lot of us too, which is why some midwives have some really strict boundaries, because they're not willing to, they just don't want to have to deal with that, which I can totally understand in the space that I'm at now.
I imagine that's something that a lot of midwives have. It's like a dragon looming over them, having to walk on that red tape. That's exhausting.
Yeah, you're trying to be with women, and that's why we do this job. But then the regulatory bodies are, their expectations are, well, here's what all the policies and guidelines say, so we expect you to follow these, even though they're not necessarily evidence-based.
Do you personally see the hospital system being able to catch up with it and home birth being more supported within the future? Loaded.
Do I see the hospitals catching up with what being with woman?
Yes.
No. To be honest, no, because it's a system. It's a business. And hospitals are where sickness goes. So they've got beds to fill and empty, and it's a process. And if you don't keep the process going, then chaos comes. So I think if anything, if they could implement birth centres for every hospital, then that may help, because then they can sort of have that level of separation, because it's a wellness, not an illness. But you've still got the issue of the level of risks. Like, everyone's got a risk. I was just talking with a client recently about GBS, the risk of GBS for a baby getting ill. And they carry on about, I say they, inverted commas, risk of babies getting unwell from Group B streptococcus if it's present in mum. But then, so they'll automatically treat women in labour. If a woman's shown to be positive, then they get treated with antibiotics in labour. But then, if you look at the RANSCOG risk of a severe reaction to antibiotics, it's like 1 in 2,000. And the risk of baby getting unwell is like two. So, well, for Queensland specifically, it's like 20 in 60,000. For a year, like, but that's per year. It's like, based on the assumption that we have 60,000 births in Queensland, it's 20 per 60,000 that we could, but then it's 1 in 2,000 of getting a severe reaction to antibiotics. I'm like, well, what? Why are we giving prophylactic antibiotics to everyone then? Like, it was a real eye-opener when I looked at that, and I was like, oh, but that's the preference, is to give antibiotics.
That's really interesting you say that too, because all throughout uni they're hammering into you don't believe in sacred cows, don't just go with the status quo, question things, question how they, how that, why we're doing things, because that's true evidence based. But I mean, what do you do when you find those, that kind of information? Like, where do you go with that? Do
Well,
people.
I told the woman, and it's documented in her notes. So she's very well informed.
Good. Good. That's good.
If you don't document, it didn't happen. When you're going into your practice, working in the hospital, whatever, as a midwife, document everything. I've always been a storyteller with my notes, so I've always said when she's changed position, or she's sipping water, or she's gone to the water to the toilet and emptied her bladder, she's had a nibble of some food, like all those little things tell the story of what's happened. And it then is easier because you're not going to remember everything. If you ever had to retell a story, if you got reprimanded for something, you're not going to remember the details. So the more detail you can put in, the better. And yes, it takes up more time. But you could do a dot point kind of, like, it doesn't have to be in a full, I tend to write in full sentence, so that's to my own detriment. But you can just write past your, like, PU, like shorten form so that you've got it all noted with times. Yeah, that's my piece of advice. Yeah.
I think that's great because it can be a little bit ex daunting thinking about like, well, we got to change the system and we got to get the big man and we got to, you know, but you're doing real actionable things that you can do within your scope and making sure that the individual woman is like yourself is protected and the individual woman is going to have the best experience that she can have within you. Like it's,
Well, it's realistic, and it's also not your journey. Like, I know, like, talking with past clients when they talk about their friends, oh, this person's booked at this hospital and they're saying this, and I just wish they'd do this and do that. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not your experience. They've got to have that experience for whatever reason. It's not your job to save them or do anything. It's feed a little bit of information, and they'll either be open to it or they're not. It's no different to someone recommending a book and you don't touch it, and then years down the track, someone recommends it again. And you finally read it and go, oh, I get it. I was meant to read this a while ago. Or you've read it before and it didn't make sense, and you read it another time and go, oh, this makes so much more sense now. It's get it receiving it when you need when you're actually ready to receive it. So you have to let go of that control of trying to save everyone.
yeah. Is that the same advice you would give as well if, for example, a client wants to make a decision that you don't necessarily agree with about their care or their health?
Yeah, I mean, most of the time I'm on the same page. So, like, when a client reaches out, or a potential client reaches out to me, we interview each other. I expect them to interview me, and I let them know I'm interviewing you because I want to make sure that we're on the same page and we align and our philosophy is similar and all of that. Because if you get down the track and we're totally different, it's not going to work well. It doesn't flow. And there's so many different midwives. Obviously, not everyone has that luxury. They may just get what they get and that's it. But ideally, you're finding someone that aligns with you. So I don't generally have that issue. I have discontinued care with people before. One in particular was more around dishonesty. They didn't share that they were on particular medication. I felt that was really appropriate for me to be aware of in preparation for birth. And I thought, well, if that's I'm honest with you, and I've always expected. And so that's one of the things I say right at the beginning now. I'm like, I expect you to tell me. I want honesty from you, and I'll be upfront and honest with you as well. Like, if you're smoking bongs every day, I don't care. Please just tell me. Just at least let me know so I know the potential dangers that I'm like gonna have to deal with if baby's withdrawing or things like that. Like, it's and let's actually potentially get support for you or whatever that might look like. So, yeah, my biggest thing is asking for honesty and that they're upfront with me.
To wrap up, what skills or knowledge do you think are most important for current students to develop in order to succeed in this profession?
So I mentioned about the communication, so knowing how to communicate effectively, verbally and non-verbally, like think about your body language and how that's coming across. I think just like working out, I mean, I didn't go to work to make friends. Like when I was working in that hospital setting, because obviously you've got to go there as a student, you've got to go there after, and I know some are like, I want to go down the home birth, and you still have to tick off your hours prior. Just remembering why you're there. You're not there to be besties with the cool people, because I know that's what some students, and I've seen that because I've facilitated students, and it was interesting to observe students and
Yeah.
how they were with particular people. Obviously with me, because I'm like the teacher who's gonna sign them off or not sign them off. They're a bit different, but just observing them how they interact, and then seeing them after as a grad. And who they've clicked with, and I'm like, oh, okay, interesting. Like just observing, it's a bit like high school, unfortunately. It's like finding that some students get caught up in that cool kid. I want to be with the ones who are chit-chatting at the desk, but that's not why you're there. You're not there to chit chat at the desk. You're there to be in the room with the woman. And unfortunately, I saw that a lot. They'd go in, do their job, then they come out and have a gas bag with whoever's at the desk. And that's not what I signed up for. Go and have a gas bag with the partner quietly in the room, or just shut the fuck up and observe her. Do your job. Like, that's why you are a midwife, to be with woman, not with the other midwives. So that's something that really annoyed me in that space. And then I was then seeing some students then doing that as grads. They're coming in and then they'd come out and bitch about things. And I'm like, you're doing exactly what you bitched about as a student. And you've now allowed yourself to fall into that pattern because you're too busy trying to fit in with the cool group. So I was a black sheep in the high school and I didn't follow and I stood up for myself. And it meant getting bullied and it meant not being comfortable. And I experienced the same thing as a facilitator and working in that hospital setting. The unit manager wasn't a huge fan of me and stuff. So, but it made me stronger and I still always came back to, well, I'm not here. At that point, I was there for the students and I was trying to advocate for them in that state. But when I was working with women, I was there for the woman. So really just coming back to your why, like, why are you here? And let that be the focus. It's not, you're not there to be besties with everyone. Just get some people that don't like you. Who fucking cares? That's their problem.
Well said. Well said. I don't want to add anything to that. I think it just leave it as it is. It's beautiful. All right, well, my final question then for you is, what is next for you? Obviously, you're planning on going in and doing your counseling. Congratulations. Can't wait to see where you go with that.
Yeah, it's just literally the last like 2 3 weeks. I'm like, right, I've made a decision. I want to do this.
Freaking awesome. Well, then here is your chance to plug what's coming up within the umbrella of Sasha from Barefoot Vibes slash Midwifery.
So I am very, very proud. I've created a breach, reclaiming breech birth workshop. And it is a full day workshop from 9 a.m. to 4:30. It may have to be longer depending on, I'm testing it out next week on my first few classes. And yes, as of yesterday, I just got approval from ACM, so Australian College of Midwifery, for CPD approval, and they gave me 6 hours of CPD. So pretty stoked about that because I put a lot of effort and work into just getting to know all the research and putting it all together and visually pleasing and all the, like, ticking all the boxes that you have to tick to get approval through them. Yeah, made my year. So that workshop, by the time this podcast comes out, I plan on doing some down in Canberra. So I've just put expression interests out just because I've got a grandbaby coming in September down there. So I'm like, well, I may as well do some teaching while I'm there. And then I have actually just had an inquiry for someone in Victoria. So I would like to be able to travel. So I'll have less time on call and that's what I'll spend my time. I've got 2 years worth of this being a CPD approved course. So I want to make the most of it. And my focus was getting my foot in the door at rural hospitals. And I nearly got in the door at Rockhampton for next week, but they just didn't have the space at their venue. Obviously the room bookings are limited and full for short notice. So that's my plan, is to just offer that support for the rural hospital. So I've done a lot of training with Breach Without Borders. They are usually going to the big cities. And so the rural, unless they can travel, then the rural areas are missing out. So that thought, well, I can do that. I'll go to rural areas. And I'm obviously hoping to get my foot in the door at the two local hospitals near me. So that's my goal because I know people there. So I'm like, just keep knocking on the door, telling them I'm here. Look what I've got. I've got 6 CBD for you.
Come and get it. Oh, congratulations. Congratulations on the birth of this beautiful workshop. Congratulations on all of the work that you've been doing for women and the work that you're going to be doing in the rural communities. They need you. And congratulations on the grandbaby. That's very exciting. Where can people find you if they want to see, if they want to get to know more about you?
So probably just my Instagram is the best place to go. So Sasha underscore barefoot underscore vibes. I do have a website, barefootvibes.com or .au, might be .au. The link is in my Instagram. Find me on Instagram.
Okay, and I'll of course, as always, link all of the socials and anything that we spoke about in the show notes below. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in. I appreciate it if you've made it this far. If you like the interview and you like what I do, please rate and follow the podcast on your chosen listening provider, as it not only notifies you of new episodes, but it also helps with my visibility on the platforms. If you're interested in being featured on the podcast, I've streamlined the process by creating a contact form on my website where you can say hi and let me know that you're interested. All of my social media accounts are linked there as well on my website. As always, I'll link everything in the description that was spoken about on today's episode. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode.